Good evening, and welcome to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening. Tonight we'll be talking about international education with our guests, Dr. Leah Chrisman, superintendent of the Southern Lehigh School District in the Lehigh Valley, and Dr. Bill Hunter, director of international educational outreach for Lehigh University. welcome to everyone, and delighted to be addressing what is clearly a very important topic, and I think a topic of increasing importance given the increased level of interaction and globalization in our world today. Our guests are two of the leading lights in the growing and, as I said, increasingly important field of international education in our region. Tonight we'll discuss the really what international education includes, its scale and scope, its significance, how it affects participants, and its educational and economic and diplomatic and cultural impacts upon educational institutions and the communities they serve. And finally, we'll talk about what Lehigh University and Southern Lehigh School District are doing to strengthen the global capacities of their students. I personally have had the great good fortune of working in international education for many years, and I've seen few educational activities that match its ability to help young adults mature or young teenagers mature and develop personal and professional skills that I think are going to be essential for success in the global creative economy. Let me start the conversation this evening by asking our guests, Bill and Leah, if they've seen such positive results themselves and whether the professional literature supports investment in international learning, international education. Leah, why don't you start?
Happy to. Well, at Southern Lehigh, we've tried to do a variety of international education activities, and I would say that the one thing that I hear all the time as our teachers or students travel abroad and become involved in activities even in the classroom or in the local area is that, the level of understanding and acceptance of other people just grows and grows.
Yeah.
And it's a contagion. Once they are exposed to this, once they experience it, especially with traveling abroad, people come back and they say how amazed they were, how much they learned, and that they would go again in a heartbeat given the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
As they interact with people of other, cultures and people that are diverse from what they're accustomed to, they gain this understanding that regardless of all of the conflicts that exist, people are people. And I think the one thing that they take away more than anything is how similar we all are.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we'll have, those really tough conversations about conflict in the world or, things that are happening that aren't necessarily positive.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it comes down to an idea that while governments and people of power may be engaging in those kinds of things, when you have the opportunity to talk with others face to face, whether that be through technology or face to face, and share the personal experiences as a human being, you really do come to realize that we have so many more similarities and that our differences actually enrich our lives. But we can put all of that conflict aside and accept each other really for who we are.
Mm-hmm. And I know Southern Lehigh has in recent days received some recognition, national recognition for the efforts you folks have made. Can you bring us up to date on that?
Sure. We recently were named an exemplar program. Our high school was named an exemplar program with P21, which is the Partnership for 21st Century Learning.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of really hard work has gone into really transforming our school into a 21st century model rather than, what we are all accustomed to, what we experienced in school when we went through. And international education, global activities is a part of that. And so we were actually one of 17 schools nationwide designated for this current year in that stipulation.
Here, here.
Yeah, one of two school districts in Pennsylvania, four total in Pennsylvania over the past several years since the program started. But during the application and then consequently the visit from the P21 folks, certainly global activities was a piece of that. And we were able to showcase all of the different things that we're doing. So, yes, we're very proud of that designation. And it's a journey. There's a lot more work to be done, but we definitely feel we're on the right path.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure that every one of the students who's participated in your programs goes out there as an advocate for international education.
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully indeed. We should thank Leah also for being with us this evening. As of 2 days ago, she had no voice whatsoever. So she's in the lower ranges of tone this evening. But we're glad you would come and make the effort,
Leah.
Thank you. Bill, tell us about some of the impacts that you've seen on not only Lehigh students, but in students who engage in international education, more, you know, regardless of the location.
Sure, I'm very happy to do so. And first of all, it's a pleasure to be sitting with both of you. Pleasure to call you both friends and colleagues and
here,
networking
here.
Connections as well. And so that in itself is a treasure. But I've been involved at Lehigh University now for 16 years. And it's an exciting place to work. Lehigh is itself a global university.
Mm-hmm.
And with a new president who's just come on this past summer, who is very focused on all things international, and a new vice president starting with us in April of 2016. We have great aspirations.
New vice president
of International Affairs.
All right. Okay.
And so we have tremendous aspirations for even more continued growth within the international realm itself. But one of the things that I've seen through my career at Lehigh in particular is that it used to be that we'd do a lot of marketing and advertising to get students to consider going abroad. And ultimately they would, but
mm-hmm.
that has changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Now students come to Lehigh with a study abroad agenda already in mind. It isn't a question of will you go abroad, but where will you and when will you?
Yeah.
So it's only a matter of fitting it into the curriculum itself and then taking the opportunity to go abroad, whether that's for service trips or credit trips or faculty-led programs, things like that as well. That's been the most significant change that I've seen in recent years.
Yeah. Well, and for bright and ambitious, professionally ambitious students, Fortune magazine for the last couple of years, every year at the end of the year, they do a profile of CEOs,
mm-hmm.
And the backgrounds of CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies. One of the things that has become increasingly clear is that if you have your eyes set on a C-suite office in corporate America, if you're working for a company that's engaged in the global economy, at least one, if not more than one, multi-year foreign postings is now almost essential for you to get consideration for senior posts in multinational corporations. You have to be able to demonstrate that you can go into another country and culture and make that corporation's business work, from that location. And so I'm not surprised, particularly at a place like Lehigh, that you're getting that kind of reaction from students.
Well, our students are very much career-minded, career-focused. And one of the things that I tell the students, and I firmly believe this, is that no matter what their major or minor or background is, if they can sit across the table from a potential employer
mm-hmm.
and demonstrate to them that they are comfortable working with people from different countries, cultures, backgrounds, religions, traditions, no matter what career they're after, that's going to be an asset.
Mm-hmm.
That's certainly an asset, but something critical to their future and their success in the working world itself.
Yeah.
So I think that's almost mandatory. And for a university, any college university in the country now, we have to make sure that our students get significant, tangible, international, cross-cultural experiences while they're on campus.
Mm-hmm.
The worst case scenario would be to have their first international experience or cross-cultural experience on their first day on the job. That just could not occur anymore
mm-hmm.
in this world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think one of the other things that we're learning is that in a hyper-competitive global economy where increasingly innovative capacity is the difference between succeeding and struggling, having people who can work with people from different backgrounds is really a powerful asset because it promotes innovation, it promotes creativity, imagination, throwing different ideas and experiences from different cultures and countries together is more likely to bring you new ideas and new perspectives on product, services, or experiences you're trying to provide. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, talk a little bit more, if you would, Bill, about what does international education do for students as students, as human beings, as perspective professionals? What are the impacts? Leah alluded to some earlier, but what have you seen, and why does it keep you excited as a professional?
I think that international education now should become the standard education for all students. Beyond reading, writing, and arithmetic, the students really have to gain an appreciation and understanding for different countries and cultures and backgrounds. So one of the things that I think it should be pervasive in any person's education, K through 20, is a direct exposure to those different, not only people, but backgrounds and perspectives. I think people who have or harbor racism in some way probably were never exposed to difference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to hate something or someone that you've never had any exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that international education does, and Leah mentioned it as well, is it breaks down those barriers.
Yeah. A lot of fear is based on ignorance, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But you've seen, I take it, in many, 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 many times, the kind of bump in personal maturity and engagement with life and education that Leah was talking about in her students.
I think international education, and in the broadest of senses, certainly builds people's comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Their public speaking abilities as well, just their ability to get outside of their own comfort zones.
Yeah,
I think that in itself is a significant hurdle.
Yep.
But once you overcome that, once you've opened that door, I think that door is open forever.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask each of you to recount some critical incident or to recall the moment that cemented your interest in and engagement with international education. Was it a gradual realization of its importance, or was it more dramatic and focused, some special moment in your life? Bill, why don't you start on that one?
This is a struggle because it's for the last now 25 years, international education has been part of my life. But when I think back to my childhood, I was born and raised in inner city Pittsburgh, a wonderful community of people. But my diversity as a kid was Irish Catholic, mm-hmm. Polish Catholic, or Italian Catholic.
Yeah.
We were all white. Uh-huh. We were all the same class of people. And I didn't recognize that there was difference beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
You could easily say that I didn't know that the rest of the world existed beyond my bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I had a very short-term study abroad program in high school
mm-hmm.
where our Spanish teacher took us to Spain.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, that door opened. Different perspectives. I thought I'd had a full year of Spanish in high school. So I thought, I must be fluent. I'm ready to go. I can conquer Spain. I fell on my face, clearly, as I should have at that point. But for me, it opened the recognition that there's a much wider, bigger world out there that needs to be understood, that needs to be discovered.
Yeah.
And that has sent me on a lifelong path of seeking
mm-hmm.
and of learning and trying to break down those barriers and open those doors.
And made for an interesting life, I'm sure. Yeah. Leah? Yeah.
Well, actually, I wish I would have had some of those opportunities when I was younger, but I did not. And grew up in a very similar situation, somewhat isolated and very traditional, I think, What really cemented this for me was my middle daughter's experiences in the workplace. She was, my kids also grew up kind of in rural Pennsylvania, very traditional, very little diversity and so forth. But she was destined to become a designer. And so she went off to New York City.
Shoes, as I recall.
Yes, shoes. She is a shoe designer.
Yeah.
And when she was about 20 or 21 years old, and actually on her second job at that point, a very large and very, famous corporation put her on a plane to China with absolutely no preparation.
Wow.
None. And here she was, this young girl by herself, went to China to work, and came back with her stories, her fears, not knowing anything about the culture, not knowing anything about the language. She had not even traveled very much. We had gone to Ireland for a wedding, but that was about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it really spoke to me that, you know, what are we doing in public education mm-hmm. to prepare kids for these international jobs and the number of corporations that are international today? And at that point, I couldn't think of a thing that we were doing, mm-hmm. not one thing, other than, you know, the typical geography or, you know, world cultures kind of traditional classes in K-12.
Is geography typical in K-12 these
it
days?
It is now, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
There was a period where I think it kind of took a back burner, but it has become more prevalent.
Come back. That's good to hear.
It is good to hear. But at any rate, it really piqued my curiosity about what we could do. And, you know, not for my daughter or my kids specifically, but about the students that, you know, I was able to impact. And from there, first of all, we were very curious about China and all of her stories. So my husband and I were able to, in 2009, take a trip with actually Lehigh County Chamber of Commerce to China. That was our first trip. And was totally fascinated by, you know, the country, the culture, the opportunities. At the same time, we, just because of a lot of different things that were going on, we started our critical language program as a pilot at Southern Lehigh, Japanese, Arabic, and Chinese, Mandarin. And from there, it just grew. You know, I took a couple more trips to China, but in the meantime, really started exploring international education more to find out what resources were available, what we could bring to our school and our students. And eventually, you know, got hooked on the P21 model. And I think, you know, the 21st century skills that are needed for people to be successful in terms of global education or international education is just taking those skills and applying them to the world, because we really are all citizens of the world today. And then, of course, you know my background in technology. And my passion for technology, and that just opens so many doors for communications and breaking down those barriers and the ability to really reach out globally and connect students and teachers globally, all kinds of experiences. So it's been a journey. There's a lot more to do, but I think what we're trying to do is create a culture at Southern Lehigh where you know, it really exemplifies all of the things that we're talking about, so that we are producing students who really are ready to go out into the world and take those jobs, so many of which have connections internationally, whether they're international companies or not. You know, we all know how much the business and industry is interconnected now. So,
in point of fact, NAFSA, a National Organization of Educational Administrators in the Field of International Education, a couple of years ago did a survey of businesses that are based in the U.S., and the companies that were surveyed reported, 40% of them reported that they had lost a business opportunity because they did not have adequate numbers of internationally competent people. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is Galen Godby, your host for Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm with Dr. Bill Hunter of Lehigh University and Dr. Leah Chrisman of Southern Lehigh School District this evening, and we're discussing international education.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
Welcome back to Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm Galen Godby, your host this evening, talking to Dr. Bill Hunter of Lehigh University and Dr. Leah Chrisman, Superintendent of Southern Lehigh, about international education. I think it'd be really helpful if you gave the audience some idea of some of the activities that Lehigh University supports. I'm very interested in your Global Union program, your United Nations role and status, and the other kinds of things that you do to promote global competence, international competence. Leah, similarly, you've made reference to some of them, but maybe talk about them a little more directly. Bill, do you want to start?
Sure. I'm happy to talk about a number of activities that Lehigh does that fosters and international education both abroad and on campus. And we were talking just earlier about the opportunity for students, all students, to have an international experience. And that doesn't mean that you have to leave campus. Certainly, we encourage that you do if an abroad potential is within your capacities. But one of the hallmarks, I think, of Lehigh University happened in 2004. Lehigh, at that point, became the sixth university in the world to attain or be accredited by the United Nations as an NGO, non-governmental organization. So when you think about NGOs, you think about Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders and Greenpeace and Lehigh University.
Mm-hmm.
We're part of that elite group of organizations worldwide that has basically unfettered access to the United Nations. And what that means for our students and faculty and staff is that we are at the UN every week for a presentation, a conference, a briefing, a workshop, a meeting with an ambassador. Just over this past weekend, we were invited to take students to attend a session with this past fall's Nobel Peace Prize winners from Tunisia.
Hmm.
That's the ultimate sort of theory to practice experience.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, we focus on the curricular side. We have classes that focus on the United Nations. One class in particular is the economics of Iraq.
Hmm.
And it's taught by a former U.S. commander who worked in Baghdad. And what he does is he teaches 7 weeks in the classroom about Iraq itself, the economy, oil, and other major internal and external factors. And then we take the entire student class, put them on a bus, take them to the Iraqi mission to the United Nations, and sit them across the table from the Iraqi ambassador to the UN itself.
Hmm, fantastic.
And we spend two solid hours grilling back and forth, helping to get a tangible, direct impression or response from the Iraqi ambassador of his take on the economy, those internal and external factors that I mentioned as well. And for the students, it's an unimpinged, unhindered opportunity to speak with a guy who speaks for the nation to the UN itself.
Fantastic. I think that UN connection also works to support your global union activities in the sense of speakers coming to campus.
Our UN partnership and our global union, I refer to them as cousins.
Mm-hmm.
With the UN, we do about 40 programs per year.
Wow.
Each semester, we have an ambassador from a high-interest country either come to campus or we visit them in New York City. We did two ambassador visits this past fall. We visited both the Russian ambassador and the Libyan ambassador.
Hmm.
We visited the timing of the Russian ambassador was unintended but uncanny because 1 week after the Russian plane was brought down over the Egyptian desert, we were sitting across the table from the Russian ambassador and asking him specifically about Russian relations with the U.S., with Egypt, ISIS, Syria, all those timely questions.
Turkey
as well. All those headlines that were on the front page of the New York Times were part of our discussion with the students sitting across the table from him at that point.
Wow. That's absolutely wonderful. Well, and I think it should be noted that you personally were really instrumental in shepherding Lehigh's request to get that NGO status at the United Nations bill. I think that was a major focus for you personally for some time, was it not? It's not an easy process.
Before coming to Lehigh, I was lucky enough to have some experiences at the United Nations and to serve there as an NGO representative as well.
Okay.
So when I presented that to the senior administration at Lehigh, they were very supportive of the initiative. It took us 4 years to earn the right to apply and to convince the UN, first of all, that we were a partner, that we were a useful partner, a potential win-win situation.
Mm-hmm.
And when we eventually got our UN accreditation, the Undersecretary General at the time, Shashi Tharoor, who is now in the Indian Parliament, when he slid the accreditation across the table from us, he said, Billy says, I don't know what you want from us, but take it. And I've never gotten those words. They're inscripted in my office as well.
There you go.
And so we take every opportunity we possibly can to get our students, faculty, and staff to the UN sitting across the table from global decision makers.
Fantastic. And finally, let me ask about Lehigh, about the number and origins, if you will, of your international students who are in residence at the university.
As I mentioned, Lehigh is truly a global university. So we certainly send a large number of students abroad to countries in all quarters of the world. But we bring in international students from around the world as well. So at this point, we have more than 1,000 international students from more than 80 countries. And one of the points I like to make to our students, but also
that's
those
1,000 students out of a total of undergraduate and graduate population of 6,500?
A little more than 7,000.
Okay, 7,000.
So one in seven, for example, comes from some other country in the world.
That's true, yeah.
And the point I like to make to our students and to those outside Lehi as well is that what happens in the world matters to Lehi.
Sure.
When there's an earthquake in Turkey or an uprising in the Middle East or something happening in India or other places, it resonates directly with our students.
Yeah.
It has direct meaning and impact on those lives. When during this past fall, with the election that was occurring in Myanmar, our students were up through the night, several nights in a row, waiting for the results of the election because it mattered directly to them. So that's the way we bring the world to Lehi, mm-hmm. and we certainly try and endeavor to send our students
send Lehi to the world.
To the world itself.
Yeah, indeed. There are other international programs and activities that Lehi may want to talk about, the Iacocca Institute later on and the Global Village. But let's turn to Leah now and get a description of some of the key programs that Southern Lehi is involved with.
Well, I think,
and has been for some time.
Yeah,
really.
I think that, Bill mentioned opportunity, and that's the key to all of this.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, every opportunity that we can find to bring to our school, we attempt to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly one of the hallmarks of Southern Lehi is our Spanish immersion program, which began in 1989.
Yeah.
And there's not too many schools in Pennsylvania that have such programs where students beginning in first grade are taught entirely in Spanish,
mm-hmm.
All the way through fifth grade, actually.
That's all subjects.
All
in
subjects,
Spanish.
Other
yeah.
than their related
yeah.
arts,
yeah.
art and music and those sorts of things. But yes, with our Spanish speaking teachers, it's entirely in Spanish. And, so that's really a hallmark program. But then beyond that, for one, Bill has been a great partner in inviting our students occasionally to travel with the Lehi students up to the UN. We did start, I mentioned earlier, the critical language program, which is a little unique, I think, for schools. We are offering the Mandarin, Japanese, and Arabic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've brought, we're up now to two teachers per year and growing. We've got over 200 students enrolled in Mandarin out of about 1,500 students from 7th through 12th grade. And so we have two teachers through Hanban, through the Confucius Institute, the University of Pittsburgh, that come and they're guest teachers for the year and teach Mandarin to our middle and high school students.
While they try to figure out what American society and culture is
exactly,
all about.
Exactly, yes. These are graduate students from primarily Wuhan University in China, but this year we also have a doctorate student, actually, from Wuhan, and a gal working on her master's from Beijing University. And we've also had through the TCLP program, Teachers for Critical Language Program, which mm-hmm. is sponsored by the U.S. State Department, we were able to have a visiting Egyptian teacher for 2 years to teach Arabic. Our latest teacher actually just visited. I was able to get a mini grant to bring her back for a month. She's been back in Egypt for 2 years now. She came for the month of November, and actually pushed into classes throughout our district at all grade levels talking about Egyptian culture. Interestingly, she was here when the Egyptian Revolution mm-hmm. was taking place.
I remember.
And now, most recently, was here when the bombing in Paris took place.
Yeah.
So she was here in very interesting times and then was able to share, her perspective with some of our older students on,
right.
on world affairs and so forth. We've also tried to bring professional development to our teachers. We work with various organizations. One in particular is called Primary Source. They do they focus on international education. They're up in Massachusetts. So we've joined them. It's a nonprofit, and they provide courses. We just had a couple teachers finish art, music, and architecture, Islamic. Others that are taking courses that have to do with human issues, mm-hmm. global issues. We have a teacher who's just finishing up a program through IREX, a global mm-hmm. teachers program. And she's actually going to be visiting Senegal for 2 weeks.
Wonderful.
For 2 weeks, I believe in April, after an intensive professional development online program.
Hey, if I could just interrupt there, I mean, it's so important for people to understand that, you know, if a school district, you know, or college finally decides it really has to be mm-hmm. serious about international and intercultural education and so on, you can't just flick a switch. A lot of teachers and faculty and other and administrators need to increase their own,
absolutely.
You know, international and intercultural quotient before you can really expect to have a robust kind of
That is
activity.
So true, and it doesn't
and
happen
we do,
overnight.
We do very little with professional development in K-12 education as a whole.
Well, and the other thing, you know, I have to say, I commend our teachers at Southern Lehigh for their dedication and their willingness to take these kinds of risks. I know when we first started off, I would hear things like, you know, we have so much on our plate. How does she expect us to do this now?
You know?
But the fact of the matter is, we do have a lot on our plate, and it's not a matter of adding more to the plate. It's a matter of changing a little bit what is on the plate.
Yeah.
So there's so much that you can do in the classroom without changing your core curriculum just by having the mindset, again, that we are part of a global community and bring in some of those international perspectives, mm-hmm. regardless of the content. We just had two of our administrators and one of our board members mm-hmm. Travel to China.
Wonderful.
On a program through the College Board. One of our teachers just is doing a pilot actually with the College Board where they're connecting with an organization, again, another nonprofit, we.org, that they approach global issues, global problems, and they engage AP students in solving those problems in teams. Again, demonstrating all of the 21st century skills mm-hmm. with some guidance through these various programs. It goes on and on and on. We have sister school experiences. We've got a teacher from Uruguay that's coming, again, through TCLP, one of their programs. He's going to come during February mm-hmm. and shadow it. It's a science teacher. He's going to be in our middle school, living with one of our Spanish teachers and shadowing her and pushing out into our other classes. So the opportunities are there. It's a matter of seeking them out and mm-hmm. networking with folks like yourselves. And once you start down that path, it just seems like the opportunities explode. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Another great partner has been actually Berks County Intermediate Unit. They've got the mm-hmm. Asian Collaborative, and they work with us with our Chinese teachers. But they have hooked us up to an organization called World Artists. Mm-hmm. Experiences in mm-hmm. Washington, D.C. That program has allowed or has brought programs actually to our district where we have hosted Chinese performances mm-hmm. and opened it up to our community. So we're also inviting our senior citizens in, our community members in, to try to understand what we're trying to do on this mission.
Oh, this is great stuff. One of the things that comes through in both of these, in both of your points or presentations about some of the things that are going on at your institutions, international education is not simply study abroad.
No.
International education is not simply international students coming here. International education requires a culture shift within the institution, whether it's a high school, an elementary school, a college or university. It's not just about programs, formal programs. When a student is reading about Machu Picchu,
absolutely.
That's international education. When you have students, a friend of mine at Drexel University has students who are working collaboratively with students in India using, a variety of technologies to mediate the projects that they are doing together. I mean, it's just really, really quite remarkable. But the key thing is to understand this is not say, oh, okay, we're going to now add one more program called international education. It's about changing the culture, changing the curriculum, integrating international and intercultural insights into specific, into a whole range of specific classes, extracurricular activities, and so on. And it takes a lot of skill, especially in K-12, where there are so many demands, as you say, being placed on the schools these days. Yeah. Follow up there, Leah, what does Harrisburg require or permit in this field for elementary and secondary education? What kind of latitude do you as a school district have in deciding what you do, how much you do? Is the State Board of Education, in your judgment, serious about international agenda? Is it just finding its sea legs on this? How does the Commonwealth compare with other states in this area? Do you have any sense of those things?
Well, I think one thing that makes Pennsylvania a little bit unique is that we are locally controlled with our local school boards. So there's going to be variations depending upon the specific school district and maybe the the focus or the initiative of the folks that are in charge. The state standards have some international education standards, woven here and there, primarily in, I would say, pretty traditional areas like, the social studies area or business and technology area. But other than that, it really takes some creativity to bring these kinds of things to the table. As far as the state board, I can't speak for the state board. I don't really have interactions with them. But I will say that I am very optimistic with our new, our governor's focus on education, and certainly our new Secretary of Education seems to be sincerely interested in expanding some of these areas. I've been in touch with him and his deputy on P21 and on global education, sending them emails periodically, encouraging them. And I definitely have gotten positive feedback with them. I think right now they're consumed with everything going on in Harrisburg with the budget and, just trying to pull things together. But I'm optimistic that we are moving in the right direction and we may be getting more support at that level.
It would certainly be encouraging and appropriate. 250,000 Pennsylvanians work for foreign-owned companies and organizations in the Commonwealth, and that's just foreign-owned companies, let alone us Pennsylvanians involved in export industries. This is Galen Godby, your host for Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm with Dr. Bill Hunter of Lehigh University and Dr. Leah Christman of Southern Lehigh School District this evening, and we're discussing international education.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
This is Galen Godby, your host for Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm with Dr. Bill Hunter of Lehigh University and Dr. Leah Christman of Southern Lehigh School District this evening, and we're discussing international education. Do you have a sense of how many international students are studying in American higher education these days? I don't know the total myself. I do know China sends the most. I think it's around 300,000 Chinese students studying in American higher ed. India, I think, sends around 150,000-160,000. And little Saudi Arabia, with 28 million people, sends 80,000 students. They're the third largest. I know that. But so the total is somewhere 700,000, 750,000, would you guess?
It's even larger than that. In 2015, there was a significant increase in the number of international students coming to the U.S., up almost 10%.
Wow.
Which puts it over 1.05 million international students coming into the U.S. for an education each year.
Wow. That's a 10% jump year to year.
It is.
That's pretty unusual and pretty exciting. I think it's important for people to realize that Higher education is really one of the major saleable assets of the American nation in the global economy. It's really quite remarkable. And thinking of the students that we send abroad for formal programs from American higher education, it's got to be close to a million when you think of all of this. There's over 300,000 who are studying for academic credit, and then study tour, cultural study tours, business oriented study tours, service learning programs. You know, it must be fairly close to that number of students who are from other countries coming into the U.S. for study.
I think the goal, the optimal goal, is 1 million. The Institute of International Education has set that as a goal. Unfortunately, I don't think we're close to that number at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And the length of term students are abroad is obviously diminishing as well. More students are going on short-term experiences than the long-term semester or year abroad, which still exists but in smaller numbers. But certainly the goal for nationwide to send students abroad is at 1 million.
Yes. Okay. What can you give us a profile of students who participate in American students who go to other countries who participate in study abroad? Are we talking about kids from rich families, middle-class families, poor families, gender breakdown, ethnic breakdown, things like that?
Sure. I think most students now, and particularly those who come to Lehigh, have a strong interest in studying abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And so we send students from all classes and backgrounds and experiences abroad. Part of our goal as an institution is to make that opportunity available to all students.
Mm-hmm. And Leah, you know, I wonder, I just think it's remarkable the wonderful things that you guys are doing at Southern Lehigh. I wonder if I had the superintendent of the Allentown School District here, if we would be having a very different kind of conversation about international education. Do we need as a state or as a nation to do something more to try to balance out? Because my sense is that you get more middle class and upper class kids participating in these kinds of programs than you do poor students in most cases. Is there something that we need to do to try to encourage more students from low income backgrounds to deal with this issue, to be part of this? Or does, because I think the danger is international experience can become just another advantage, you know, for certain socioeconomic groups, and, you know, leaving other people farther and farther behind.
Well, that's a really good question. Certainly, depending upon the school district, each school has its set of challenges. And I would venture to say that the challenges that exist in Allentown, and I know Dr. Mayo very well,
sure,
Are very different than the challenges that we have in Southern Lehigh. So your point is well taken. At the same time, there's a greater diversity already existing within, you know, the halls of Allentown, mm-hmm, and even Parkland and East Penn being larger school districts than we have at Southern Lehigh. And that was also one of the reasons I think that this was so important for our school district, because we do have very little diversity. It's growing, but it's still very little. So clearly the students, you know, travel abroad, and we do, a year doesn't go by that we're not taking students somewhere in short-term visits, oftentimes associated with our language programs, sometimes associated with our social studies programs. This year in particular, we're taking students to France, Australia, New Zealand, and hopefully China to visit one of our sister schools. But that's expensive, very expensive.
Sure.
And so it obviously eliminates students who don't have the means, even though there's, you know, payment programs sometimes spread over 2 years. It's still expensive, very expensive for students to do that. So luckily, but here again, this has to do with individual challenges in each school district. We've been fortunate enough to have the technology to bring the world to our students regardless of their socioeconomic condition. And it may surprise you to know, for instance, a lot of times people will think that these kinds of activities are exclusive to our upperclassmen. And in fact, we have one of our elementary buildings has made it a goal that every single classroom, K-3, is connected virtually, you know, using the technology, with another classroom and their teacher somewhere in the world. And they aren't all global. Mm-hmm. You know, many of them are even within the U.S., but still it's the same idea, you know, getting to know students and people that have some cultural differences. But we do have those international connections, and we have been fortunate enough to do that. For instance, again, another program, one of our teachers a couple years ago participated with a Global Nomads program. It was a year-long curricular tied to civics in ninth grade, where they connected multiple times with students in Afghanistan and Pakistan and talked about some of these really critical issues.
Yeah.
So we've been very fortunate to have the technology open the world again to all students. And that has great hope. But likewise, you know, we're very fortunate at Southern Lehigh that we are now one-to-one with devices K-12. And we've got the infrastructure to support that.
Right.
And without a doubt, other schools, even within the Lehigh County, do not have those kinds of benefits.
Yeah. And so I think clearly, as is true for almost any aspect of K-12 education, the issue of equalization formulas and the way in which we raise money for K-12 and property taxes versus other sources
very
of income.
Very complex, absolutely.
Very complex, but has to,
critical.
In some sense, has to be addressed in some way if the U.S. is going to become a leader in international education. I think one of the other points is that even if you are a low-income district, because we recognize that not everybody is going to be able to go on an airplane and go to another country for 3 months and so on. I mean, if you put every student on an airplane, if we had resources, it would be an environmental disaster because of the pollution that airplanes create. The point is, if you use technology, if you build relationships, international relationships, and then use technology, you can do international education in a serious way without the question of, you know, who's going and how much does it cost, you know, and how long are you going to stay?
Absolutely. And there's so much that can be done. And the large majority of the programs that we utilize are free.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many nonprofit organizations, other applications and so forth that are connecting students to students, teachers to teachers via the internet in many different ways. And again, you don't even need to be a one-to-one school. All you need is a computer and a projector and an internet connection, and you can do amazing things, again, if you have that mindset that this is important work.
Exactly. Obviously, the three of us are advocates for international education. We've all looked at in the eyes of kids and faculty who've come back from a trip, and they just, I mean, the expression in their eyes tells us volumes about the changes that they may have experienced. But we have to deal with the issue of assessment. We think that we're making a significant difference through international education in the lives of a lot of students and faculty, and through them, their communities, and that it's a quote-unquote good thing. How do we know that? How do we measure? Do we measure the effects on individual students and school communities, that result from international experiences and programs and activities? And if we are measuring these things, how do we measure these things? This must be a very complicated. When you're trying to tease out experiences and relate inputs to outputs, it's got to be complicated. But certainly we'd need to make some effort. Are we making some kind of effort?
Well, I would say probably not enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the old adage, what you measure is what gets taught. And yet these are not easy things to measure. I'll give you one example of something that we've done, and again, this is a big risk, and thank goodness we've got a school board that supports us and parents that support us in taking this risk. But we, at the high school specifically, eliminated traditional paper, pencil, midterm, and end-of-year exams as of last year, and we went to a more project-based assessment. There's still a paper-pencil component, but in every, and this is across the board, in every content area, students are forming teams. We're trying to encourage them and encourage our teachers to develop projects or programs for big issues, real issues, real world issues, and even take the kids outside of the classroom over the entire year. And so we are using a rubric mm-hmm. based upon 21st century skills and competencies that are needed, and certainly the international component is a piece of that. It's not entirely that. But that's one thing that we're doing to, you know, using the rubrics and describing what we want to see in good, you know, in students, eventually good workers, good citizens, and then, you know, assessing kids in that way. And I know some school districts have developed academies, for instance, in international academies where students might get a special designation on their diploma, mm-hmm. Transcript, that sort of thing. But I am the first to say I think we have a long way to go in these areas. And, Bill, I think you may be able to add even more to this conversation.
Sure. I think the easy answer, and you got it correct, is that no, the U.S. is not doing enough to measure the impact of international experiences or classroom-based experiences that help to broaden one's mind and prepare them for the global workforce. So I'm encouraged by the U.S. government and a number of federal grants that have come out recently. And within the grant proposal or application itself, it requires those applying for the grant to stipulate what specific assessments they'll be using to determine the difference. Show me the difference that you're making in your students mm-hmm. by instituting some sort of interjection in some mm-hmm. way. So the focus that I've taken through my research has been on global competence. Mm-hmm. And when I started my research, there were about a dozen different definitions of the term global competence itself. And part of my goal was to whittle that down into one easily understood, facilitated, and accepted definition. And that came out. So when I say global competence, what we refer to is having an open mind while actively seeking to understand cultural norms and expectations of others, and leveraging this gained knowledge to interact, communicate, and work effectively in diverse environments. And what that means is, through a model that we built through the dissertation and the research itself, which you were very kind to be helpful on, I appreciate that, we recognize the need to measure things like intercultural capability, global awareness, historic perspective, open-mindedness. But at the center of that model is always self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Who are you? What constitutes you? Create for yourself a boundary and then step out of that boundary. Sort of mm-hmm. understand where you are on the spectrum and then choose to step out of it. That's one of the things that has to occur at all levels of education.
You know, my own, and we all have different definitions, I guess, of effective international education or global confidence. And for me, it's primarily a question of whether you can inspire trust in people from other countries and cultures, the trust that's necessary to get your work done, whatever, or accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish. And you can't do that unless you have an open mind, and you can't do that unless you are comfortable, you know, in who you are, you know, and yet have the ability to put yourself in the place, learn enough about that culture, that country, so that you can put yourself in the place of the people you're trying to work with. Because ultimately, trust, it seems to me, is the foundation and the most powerful force, you know, in human relationships and consequently the world. And so how do we get young people who can feel comfortable enough, confident enough, that they can work with people who are different, who they used to see as the other, you know, and recognize them as human beings and people who can, you know, participate in their lives in some way. So this is really, I think, really a fundamental issue. In just the last moment or two here, clearly one of the, clearly the greatest challenge humanity will face over the balance of the century is climate change. It's really a huge, huge challenge for us. Are there ways in which students from our country can work with students or faculty from other, or are working with students or faculty from other countries related to this topic of climate change and protecting our natural environment?
Well, again, I think it's amazing some of the activities that are going on, in many cases via the internet, where, you know, take a global problem such as that connect kids, never underestimate our students, their abilities, their creativity, their innovation is just amazing.
Yeah.
And I think you start putting, as you said earlier, putting people of diverse backgrounds together, all working towards a common goal, and by far, you know, amazing things can happen. So I do know that there are various projects out there that are underway to do exactly that.
Okay, Bill.
And certainly Lehigh's faculty and students are working with partners around the world to achieve the newly passed and approved of Sustainable Development Goals, the 17 goals that will lead us for the next 15 years and hopefully to a brighter, less congested life.
Indeed, indeed. Well, as we wrap up this evening's program, I want to thank both of you very much for your time, for your leadership in this field. It's an exciting and important area, and I would like to thank you for listening to our listeners for listening to Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY.